It's the Night Shift on Triple M. Now, it's said that for every action hero, there has to be a villain. And I think Australia has one of the all-time great movie villains. That's Vernon Wells. He played Wes in the iconic film Mad Max 2 and also played the role of Bennett in Commando opposite Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's had some of the best death scenes you'll ever see in movies. And I'm very fortunate to have Vernon Wells on the line. Good morning, Vernon.
Good morning, Adam. How are you?
Very well, thanks, mate. You're in Los Angeles in the grip of coronavirus. How are things there?
I'm slowly but surely getting cabin fever. I may go insane shortly and bury someone down the hill. I'm not sure, you know, it's getting to that point.
Yeah, it's a tough time for the world. But I guess we can escape to movies. And tell us about how you became the great movie villain. You sort of fell into it, didn't you?
I never really wanted to be an actor. It wasn't my thing. I directed commercials and small documentaries, things like that. And I was really happy doing that. I never really wanted to be, you know, being in front of the camera and actually opening my mouth and saying words was terrifying to me.
Hmm.
I did a couple of television things.
Right, you were in Homicide and Matlock Police, All the Rivers Run. I mean, you have a pretty good portfolio.
I did quite a lot of stuff. Yeah, I got out of the habit of not talking and actually got into saying the odd word or two. But it still wasn't my forte, you know. It was not where I really wanted to be. I loved being behind the camera and directing and doing that. And by sheer coincidence, I was asked to do a play at the Playbox Theatre in Melbourne, a play by Michelle Tremblay, a French-Canadian writer called Hosanna, which after a lot of discussion, a lot of coaxing and a lot of pleading, I actually said that I would do it. Not really wanting to, not figuring it would go anywhere. It terrified me, to be polite. If you know anything about the play, it's about a transvestite and her boyfriend. So that you know, a little boy from the country, born and bred on a farm, you know, that just transvestite word terrified me.
Rushworth, Victoria, I think, is your hometown.
Rushworth, Victoria, yes. Yeah. So I was... you know, like, no, I don't want to do this. But then eventually I got talked into it and I did it. And George Miller's girlfriend, Sandy Gore, or his girlfriend at that stage, Sandy Gore, happened to see a performance I was in and rang George and said, "You've got to come and see this guy. He's got what it takes." And George never did come to see me, by the way. He came down to Melbourne and we had a cup of coffee and talked and told ridiculous jokes to each other. And he left and went back to Sydney. And a couple of months later, my management rang me and said, "You have to fly to Sydney to do wardrobe and makeup." And I said, "For what?" You know, I was kind of a little bit confused. And I said, "For Mad Max 2. And I went, "Mad Max 2, what's a Mad Max 2? And they said, "Well, didn't you ever see Mad Max?" And I said, "No." And they said, "Well, you better."
So you hadn't seen the first film?
I hadn't seen the first film, no.
Right.
I actually went and saw it as a double header. It was Road Warrior and Steven Spielberg's first film. Gosh, I can't think of that. The one about the semi-trailer.
Oh, Duel.
A Duel, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic.
So I saw it as a double header. You'd hate me for saying it, but I like Duel more.
Is that right?
Duel was really, really cool, and you know, like Mad Max. So they wanted me to be in Mad Max, and I went up. I saw George in Sydney, and we did all the wardrobe and all that kind of stuff. And wasn't what I kept saying that I didn't think I could do the role, because the role scared me, because I
really
figured out I was going to be the second lead in the film, and that terrified me.
And such a complicated character. I mean, part biker, part American Indian. Was that you doing the stunts, all those big flips and things?
I did a lot of the stunts, but some of the, like the flip on the boardwalk, I didn't do. One of the transfers from the motorbike to the truck, I didn't do. But then there's a couple of them you can logically see that it's me, where I'm between the semi and the pickup truck and they're pulling me aboard. I did a lot of the stuff because, you know, that's just the way I was. You know, I like to get, and George would hold me down and get them to tie me up because, you know, he wanted to finish the film with me.
What I always found remarkable was the wardrobe. You're wearing the leather pants, but with no bum.
They were back in them.
Yeah, no back. You had a rather nice backside back in the day there, I have to say, Vernon.
Pretty... Yeah, they're called chaps.
Chaps, exactly, the chaps.
Yeah, you actually wear a pair of jeans under them.
Oh, but you didn't, though, did you?
I didn't, though, no. I didn't have nothing under them.
How did you ride a motorbike with your cheeks against the motorbike seat?
Yes, yes, that was called rug burn. You know, it was like I had one of the reddest butts you've ever seen for so long, just like sliding around on that effing bike seat.
Wow.
So they actually put fur on the bike seat to keep it from really irritating me.
Nice.
And it was basically the same thing with the feathers and that, which became the big thing of the costume, was originally there was nothing around my neck. And in rehearsal, because I'd moved so much, the shoulder pads are very, very stiff, and they started to cut my neck. I started to bleed from it, and so they were like, oh, crap, we got to have that. We've got to do something about that. So we've got to come up with a better idea. And Miss McCurry came up with the idea of the feathers because I loved Indians, because I'd been talking to her and saying I'd always dreamt of playing a Mohawk Indian, and here I was as a Mohawk with the face paint and everything. George gave me that bit with putting the paint across my face under my eyes so that I look like an Indian.
Yeah, and there's also the controversy about the character as well. The relationship with the Golden Youth has always, you know, had the academics and film buffs, you know, analysing it. What was that relationship about?
There was a bit that wasn't in the film. I can't remember. I think we shot it. I'm not sure. I could be terribly wrong on saying that. But right at the start of the film where you see us riding along the street and then we start chasing Mel right at the beginning, there was a bit more before that happened. There was a piece where you see me riding and you see all these bikies in front of me and they ride up a hill. There's a house up on the hill and all they ride up there and they start shooting and they're screaming and carrying on, and they set the house on fire, and I ride up, and there's this young kid, blonde kid, comes running out of the house, and one of the marauders, as he runs past, grabs him by the hair and drags him back and puts a knife to his throat, and I stop him, and I grab the kid, and I put him on the back of my bike, and I ride off. And that was how it started. Then the next time you see the kid is when we're on the road chasing Mel.
Yes, and of course the feral kid throws the boomerang and kills the Golden Youth, and that's a major plot point for you. This is now, there's a lot of revenge in this mission for you.
There was a lot of thing of like, was he my lover? And to me, he was my surrogate son. He was the only pretty thing in a wasteland, and I had taken him and kept him as mine.
That is right. You look like he stepped straight out of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, as opposed to Mad Max.
Yeah, that was interesting. I think that the hardest part of that was that George would always say to me, Vernon, don't get to be so friendly with Emil, because I would play with Emil and we'd be doing things, and you know, and he would say, don't get too friendly with Emil because it's going to come back to bite you on the bum, basically.
Right.
And I was like, yeah. And so in the death scene, when I'm on front of the truck, I actually had to go over the front of the truck when it was moving. They had a net to catch me on the front of the truck. So I actually went over into this net, which was one shot, which was a little scary. The other was that then I was on the front of the grill, basically, while Mel was driving the truck. That was even scarier. And then when I came up and grabbed the feral youth by the hand, he was supposed to do what he did, which was scream. Well, the first time I did it, he laughed at me. He thought it was very funny. And George, when I was setting up for take two, just looked at me and went, what happens next is on your head. And I was like, oh dear, what have I done? And he actually put a blood pack in my hand, basically, so that when I came up the second time and hit him on his hand, there was just blood, and he freaked. And that was the reaction that you saw in the film.
Just before Humongous slams into the semi-trailer being driven by Mel Gibson, you give off the best death scream of all time. It still echoes in my mind. Let's listen to it now. This is The Night Shift on Triple M. My special guest, Vernon Wills, is still with me here. Now, you played the bad guy in Mad Max, then you become Bennett in Commando opposite Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that's also one of the great iconic death scenes as well. I mean, my favourite part, of course, is you're fighting Arnie, and then he throws you against the electrical transformer, whatever it is, and you think, he must be dead. He must be. But he jumps back up again, and he's into it again. He's just unstoppable, the old Bennett.
Yep. Oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun. I love that film. I had so much fun doing it. It was one of those fun things that you do. And Arnie was very unsure of me because I'm very quiet when I'm on the set, and I work very differently to a lot of Americans who are loud and do their thing. I'm very quiet watching everything, the cameras, the lights, the whole thing. So I'm not really putting a lot of energy out there. You know, you don't sort of get that feeling from me that I could rip your head off and tie your intestines around your heart. It just didn't give that feel. So Arnie was a little unsure and sort of told the producer, Joel Silver, you know, he was a little worried about me, and Joel said, well, let's do this scene. And it was the opening scene of me putting the knife against his throat when he's on the table.
Okay.
When he's tied to the table, and I say, you know, if I'd had my way, I would have cut your throat.
Yes.
That was the first thing I shot in America, on that film, was that scene. And I just did my thing, and then when they did that scene, I just did it the way I would do it as a character. And when we finished, Joel sort of said to Arnie, so what do you think? And Arnold went, never give him a real knife.
Because when I see that portrayal, it does remind me, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but a little bit of Chopper Reed. You got the Chopper Reed moustache, and you got that demeanour about you, the swagger, and the pretty good lines.
Yeah, I had some fun. Actually, most people thought I thought I looked exactly like the lead singer out of Queen.
Freddie Mercury. You had the Freddie Mercury moustache. You did indeed.
Yep. Yeah. And they actually did a little thing in Mad Magazine. You know, the Mad Magazine, they did a cover, and they did a little thing on. I had two, which I don't know if that makes me famous or what, but I had two covers for Mad Magazine. One was for Road Warrior, and the other one was for Commando. And in the Commando one, they had on the front of the T-shirt that I was wearing, I am not Freddie Mercury on steroids.
But you've had a tremendous career as a villain. In fact, you've been typecast as a villain, Vernon Wells. But you've also played some other role. Occasionally, you're the lead man or you're the hero. I think we see the real Vernon Wells in those roles.
Yeah, I have. I always say when I'm teaching that it's so much easier to play a villain because unless you are one of those people, you're not playing yourself. You're playing a character. But when you're playing the leading man or the offsider to the leading man, you know, you're a good guy. But unless they let you have a little bit of a twist to the character, you're playing a lot of who you are in that character. And that to me is the hardest thing to do because you're putting yourself out there on the screen. When I'm playing Bennett or Wes or any of the other multitudinal hundreds of characters.
Rancic, of course. I forgot Rancic from Power Rangers.
I'm not playing me. I'm just playing a character that I've created. So it's so much easier to do. But when I'm playing the good guy, like I did a film which is out at the moment here in this couple, but one of them was called The Lighthouse Keeper. And that one was a little difficult for me because, number one, there's only three people in the whole film, but it was a lot of who I am in the character, a lot of who I am, because he wasn't a bad guy, he wasn't a good guy, he was the lead, and it was, so there was quite a bit of who I am. And then the reverse side of that is I did a film which just came over, it's all over the internet, the downloads and streaming and all that at the moment, called Trouble Is My Business, a film noir, black and white, which was, I love, I think it's a wonderful film. I play a very corrupt California cop in the 1940s. And that is definitely not me. But there's just those two sides of the coin, you know, one where there's a lot of me on the screen and one where there's definitely not any of me on the screen. And it's fun. I like it. I enjoy it.
And you're still loving it. I believe you're one of the hardest working men in Hollywood. You pop up all the time.
Love it. I just love what I do. Love the stuff that I've got to do. I've gone into partnership with a gentleman named Brian Martin in Sacramento. We have a studio complex in Sacramento, in which I'm a partner in. And he's a writer, director, very, very good one. And I've done some stuff with him. He allowed me to go back behind the camera, which I love. So I've been directing. I directed with him a film called SOS, a horror film. And I've been directing episodes of a series that we've got, which could be coming on to cable after all this is over, called Fanged, which is a vampire series.
Are you a baddie in that one?
I'm not at the start. I'm just a nice... I'm the leader of the vampires, but I'm just a nice guy. And then his daughter gets killed by the police. And that sort of sets him off. Then he becomes a bad guy.
Good. Yes. Excellent. We can't have you acting out of type here. Hey, listen, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, Andy, my pleasure. I'm happy to talk to you anytime.
And please stay safe over there and keep doing what you do. That's what we need right now in the world.
I definitely will, my friend. I love it, and I'm not quitting anytime soon.
That was Vernon Wells. I think one of Australia's great acting exports, and played those iconic roles. There's actually a funny meme at the moment there where Wes, as you know, in Mad Max 2, he's there on the motorbike and he's jumping onto the petrol tanker and so forth. Now there's a meme with Wes jumping onto the toilet roll truck. It's the times we live in. So it's over to you now. Tell me, who is your all-time favourite movie villain and why? Give us a call on 133 53. This is The Night Shift on Triple M.